career sucks.
Sex just isn't the same.
What's my purpose?
Where did this fat come from?
My relationship is killing me.
I'll never be happy.
My debt is piling up. I'll never find love. Why can't I be like other gay guys? Hey guys, it's time to get a grip, stop whining, make a bold move, and do something amazing with your 40 plus gay life. Let's get to the show with your Tell It Like It Is host, Rick Clemons, who does his best to never act like a dick or a diva unless you act like one first.
Hey guys of the 40 plus crowd, we are into it. It is June, it is Pride season, and some of you probably already been to some Pride. So happy Pride, and if you haven't, happy Pride for what is to come. And as guys that are over 40, one of the things we love to do is we like to go out. Not all of us, but a lot of us like to go out and party, have a good time, really, truly celebrate Pride. But sometimes it gets to be too much. Sometimes we go and we show up at the bar scene and we're like, we're just doing it out of habit. It's what we do. It's what we think we have to do. And it's what we think we need to be doing to be gay and be in that space. Nothing wrong with it. This show is not about knocking any of that. Mm-mm. But what we're going to talk about today with my guest, who is a therapist who resides in the, you know, City of Angels in LA, is to talk about how do you navigate the bar scene and when, what happens when you finally realize, you know what, maybe this partying all the way isn't the best thing for me. And again, we're not knocking anything. We're just saying, many of us, I know I've gotten to that space in my life where it's like, Hey, I enjoy a drink or so every so often, but man, that partying and going all the way just isn't where I'm at anymore. So I want to welcome to the show, Michael Pizzullo. And we're going to have a cool conversation about things he's learned being as a therapist, navigating the bar scenes, et cetera, and how he's helping clients, how I've helped clients who are like, it's time. So thanks for being here, Michael. Appreciate you, man.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to, you know, be on your podcast and to have this conversation in particular. So thank you.
Well, it's a conversation that I think oftentimes it either comes across as stop doing it, quit doing it, you're going too far, or oh, who gives a fuck? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just what we do, right? And finding that beautiful space in between. And for some, we are going to play in the fringes and extremes, right? Mm-hmm. For some people, like, I've got to cut off and completely walk away. In fact, I interviewed another guest a couple of days ago, and he talked about, you know, walking completely away. And ironically, he's a therapist and a psychologist now, and he's a Buddhist practitioner. And that's what worked for him. This is how he walked away from the drug and alcohol scene in his world. But I don't know that it's really so black and white. And I think you probably kind of found that too in your practice, right? It's like, you can't just go, it's either this or this. There's a moving into the middle, so to speak, right?
Yes. Yes. I think, you know, there of course are people who, if you look at addiction as a spectrum, there are definitely people who are on an extreme end of it, or it does have to be a black or white approach that they just can't go near any substances because it just doesn't go well for them ever. Yeah. But there are a lot of people who do fall into the gray area where it can be a lot more complicated to discern if they have a problem, if their behaviors are problematic, what's normal, what's not normal. And so a lot of people that come into therapy are in that range of that area. Mm-hmm. Actually, a lot of people that come in aren't coming in for that, but it just becomes apparent while they're there that as they begin sharing what their experience is, what they do on the weekends and so on and so forth, that it becomes obvious that they are in this gray area of substance use where it is something to be looked at.
Yeah. And it's hard because any of us, I mean, and it's not just substance use. I mean, there's addictions in so many different ways. You know, there's addictions to money. There's addictions to sex. There's addictions to drugs and alcohol. There's addictions to, I mean, I had a client that started working with me. And I would say he had an addiction, more of a phobia sort of, to not leaving his house. You know, he just didn't want to mix and mingle. Now COVID didn't help that. And that kind of exacerbated that. But I think there's this interesting thing of coming to terms with, and I came to terms with it myself. I was right on the cusp of being a sex addict. I knew that when I was married to my wife, because I was sneaking around. I was getting it however I could, wherever I could, all that sort of stuff. And then suddenly it was like a drug. It was like, okay, I got my rocks off. And then I, you know, suddenly the mask came back on and here I am, Mr. Nice heterosexual husband, father thing. Right. But it got to the point where I knew it. And I knew this was something that was prevalent in my family DNA. And I thought, wait, time out. we need to discern, is this just about wanting to be out and gay, or is this an addiction? And when I did go to therapy, I cloaked it in, oh, you know, I'm just really struggling because I'm, you know, gay and wanting to be out. But as we dug underneath the covers, it was like, you know, we finally did determine, like, okay, you're not an addict. You're right on the edge of that, you know? And it really helped me get clear. So what is one of the things that you see when somebody does come in, like, okay, as you just said, they come in and it's not what they think. And then suddenly what happens when they uncover, like, oh, here's at the root of this. This is what's really in there.
So I think in terms of discerning if something's a problem, you want to look at like frequency and quantity. How mm-hmm. often is someone doing this and how much are they doing it? And there is a little bit of a like a expectation that people are going to minimize. And so if they say they have two drinks a night, it's probably four. Or if they say they do G once a month, it's probably three times a month. Whatever it is, that people may downplay things is kind of a safe bet. So you want to start there just to get a ballpark of what they're doing, because some people might say, oh, I barely do anything. And then when you ask them for the numbers, it's like, oh my God, this is a lot. And they don't really get it. So you want to be clear about that. On the other hand too, some people will say, I have a huge problem, and you'll ask them what it looks like. And it actually isn't that bad in terms mm-hmm. of the frequency and the quantity. So that's where you want to start. I think what always piques my interest first is, how open-minded is this person to thinking about their behavior? Because some people do come in very defensive, very guarded of, I'm protecting this. I don't want to go down this road. I don't want to examine whether or not this is a problem or not. Whereas some people come in and they're very much like, I'm curious. You know, I want to look at this. And, you know, can we unpack this together? I think that's a really interesting place to start. People who tend to be more defensive typically are the people that have more of a problem.
Yep.
People that are more open-minded are usually, it's less severe. They're not defending it as much. They're not as guarded about it as much. And so that's kind of an interesting way to tell what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And I think Pride season is an interesting time to reflect. Number one, I mean, go and enjoy. Let's not diminish that. Go enjoy, be in it, however you choose to be in it. But I've actually sent some clients off to do things during Pride season. Like, I just want you to observe, just go and mm-hmm. observe others, you know? And one client in particular, and this was years ago, came back and said, I was really shocked by what I was observing in others that was really triggering me. And I said, then let's talk about what was triggering you. Because what you and I know, doing the work we do, that often whatever's triggering us and somebody else is actually something within ourselves. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that he said is, I was really triggered by how many people were just getting obnoxiously drunk on the dance floor and getting really nasty and everything. And I said, have you ever done that? And at first he's like, no. I said, okay. So I know how to, like, I don't want to say play the game, but I know how to, like, sure, I'll accept that answer for now. And then I came back around a little bit later in the conversation and said, so how would you feel about yourself if you'd seen yourself out on the dance floor doing what you observed some of these other people doing? And he got really quiet. And I just kind of waited for a moment. And he said, well, I have been there. And that's when it kind of revealed itself. And then as we started to, you know, kind of talk through it, and I'm not a therapist, so I don't go super deep into that stuff. I said, well, what would you like to prevent in the future if you see yourself in that kind of a situation? He goes, I didn't realize that's what I was really coming here to work on. But he goes, I want to set some boundaries for myself. I want to send some safe ways for me to be in the fun without getting to that space. And it was just really interesting. Now, here's the interesting piece of that whole relationship. We did start to unravel some true addiction stuff. And that's when I said, I love you, man. I love working with you, but I need to hand you to a therapist because mm-hmm. I need somebody who specializes in this. I'm a great coach. I'm never going to deny that, but I'm also a good coach because I know when to hand you to somebody who's better, you know, better at serving you. And I think that's a key point of this conversation too, is, you know, we all have modalities we serve.
Yeah.
Making sure that when you go to start to work with someone, you ask mm-hmm. the questions. For someone who might just be, as you say, the open-minded individual, they could possibly work with a coach through some of this, because that's probably going to be a good fit to some degree. And they're going to want to be pushed a little bit and get some things done. But then there's also a piece of them that they may be hiding some of that. which in therapy, we can dig in under it and expose it in a different way. And that's why I love the two modalities working together, because I think they're so powerful to help someone really move through their stuff. But when somebody gets really defensive, what's one of the tactics that you find is really successful to like move them out of defense and into acceptance and open-mindedness? And I know it's really, not just one tactic.
Yeah,
I know
yeah,
that.
Yeah. That's a really good question. And, you know, it's so prior. So now I work in a private practice where people come to see me by choice. Right.
Yeah.
And people that have a high acuity addiction, you have to refer them to a rehab if they're doing like opiates or,
right,
you know, heavy alcoholism, things like that, where they could die. But it's very different. I used to work in treatment facilities like addiction rehabs where people are coming in for help, but they're not choosing you. It's a little different.
Yeah.
But it's the same conversation. People come in and they're very defensive about they're protecting their addiction. They're guarding their addiction. And so what you want to be very careful about is that you don't get into a tug of war of them of, I'm going to pull this way. And then, because it's just going to make them pull harder the other way and you're not going to get anywhere. And so what you want to get them to do is do the work themselves. So you want to appeal to the part of them that knows this is a problem, that knows that they have an issue, and kind of go down that avenue and kind of ask them, like, are you okay with that? You know, these are the potential consequences. Are you okay with it? Don't worry about what I think, but how do you feel? And then you also, you know, addiction treatment historically used to be very shame-based of, this is bad, you're doing a bad thing, what's wrong with you? It was very shaming, and that's why people didn't seek out treatment. There wasn't a lot of sympathy for it. That's gotten a lot better, but still there is a huge degree of people look at people who have addiction and go, like, what are you doing? Like, why would you do fentanyl? Why would you do meth? Like, there's a lot of judgment. So if you can appeal to the part of them that holds the addiction and try to understand it rather than try to take it away from them. Like, why is this so important to you?
Well, it always comes down to, why is it important to you, and how does it align with your own values that you hold true to yourself, no matter what you're doing?
Yeah. Like, what function does this serve for you?
Yeah. I always find it interesting when with the people, and, you know, I love our community, but we can be a very judgmental community. And I love the ones who do the highbrow. What are you doing? How could you do? And there's been moments where I kind of like, well, let me explain how somebody can do this. You love going to the gym. In fact, you go to the gym religiously because this is what you're going to do. No matter what, you're going to be in the gym, right? I'm not knocking it. But in a way, there could be some addiction to that too.
Sure.
And suddenly it changes their whole perspective. Like, of course, they get a little defensive. Then I'm like, see what I'm saying? You're now becoming defensive because I'm saying your gym going and being there and working out for 2 hours at a time, and that's what's got to happen. There's something about that, yes, it's making you feel really good. You got a rocking body. All that stuff's really great. But what's underneath that actually, if that got taken away from you, would you be able to function? You know, would you be able to thrive? And you can do it with anything, you know, like, well, you sure seem to love to eat cookies a lot. I never like to do that one because, like, I'm not calling you a fat ass. I'm not saying that. But it is interesting how we as humans can really quickly throw the judgment on somebody instead of going, wait, what is this for them?
Yeah.
And what is it, you know, for me? And I guess because I've had two people very close in my life who are addicts, it was really tough. Until in one case, you know, I was in about addiction. It was my mom and my ex-wife who suffered from depression. And I was just like, get over it. Just get over it. Until I discovered I suffered from depression. And it changed everything.
Yep.
Because it's like, whoa, I finally really get that. And I'm inviting anybody who's listening, even though we're saying, hey, go observe people at Pride, see what you're doing. Do it from a place of observation and learning for yourself, but try to keep the judgment out of it.
Yes.
Because you'll learn and grow so much by just like learning about yourself in these moments rather than, oh, I'm above this. None of us are above any of this. Nobody is above any of this.
I agree. And I think what you find too is that people who are very compassionate towards themselves are really compassionate towards other people. People who are very harsh and self-critical, they do it to other people too. It really does become a balanced thing.
I agree with you 100%. And you know, it's an interesting thing because when you're super compassionate, there's that interesting balance of you can be super compassionate towards others, but then you beat yourself up. So it's like, I'm going to do this, the projection piece, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or you're so compassionate to others that you forget to give it to yourself. And I think what you just said is really valuable. Like, find that beautiful way of being compassionate. You know, when you are compassionate, you can see it in others. I learned it so much from my experience with my family members who are addicts. It's like, okay, now I started to accept. And now as I've gone through my own struggles with my health, it's like, oh, wow, this is what it feels like. Like, there's nothing you can, quote, do about this except accept this is what is, and then move through it and go, okay, how am I going to show up? And I feel like that window of their world helped me accept my window of my world. I've had two strokes in the last 4 years, and it's like, wow, okay, so this is what it feels like when you're like, this crap's happening and there's not a lot I can do about it. I realize it's different than an addiction, but your compassion that I learned to give to my family members actually helped me give better compassion back to myself and vice versa. And I think that's a key piece of this whole journey.
Absolutely. And I think it's always the easiest when the thing that they struggle with is the thing I struggle with, because I can immediately go, oh, I've experienced depression. They experienced depression. I'm very sympathetic. I'm very empathetic. I know what it's like. I know what a struggle they're going through. I'm very patient with them. Whereas, you know, if it's something I've never dealt with before, it's a lot easier to go like, why would you do this? Like, I don't understand. Mm-hmm. It's a lot easier to have that separation. But I think that, you know, in my opinion, this is just my thing, but healthy, balanced people have a self-acceptance towards themselves, good and bad, that we're all a cluster of positive and negative qualities, and that they don't hate themselves for the parts of themselves that they're not thrilled about. They're okay with it. They work on them, but there's not like this shame dynamic of, oh, I hate this about me. I'm going to hide it away so no one looks at it. And so when you have that really, that strong self-acceptance, I think that's when you can really relate to others in a way that's very compassionate and very welcoming too.
Yes. And I think the strong self-acceptance is such a big piece in our community, because we've all had to accept our being gay, being lesbian, being bi, being trans, all these sort of things. Mm-hmm. And for many people, it did lead them to the addictions. It did lead them to going too far, because it was the only way they could, quote, function and work through it. I know right after I came out, again, the addiction, quote, DNA that was in my familial background, there was a point where I was literally living on, it's going to sound really gross, wine and Top Ramen. That was my way of getting through life. And I was like, everything's good. And then one day I was like, after a blackout and ending up in my neighbor's bed, which would happen in Laguna Beach no matter what. But anyway, I'm like, I can't believe I'm in his bed, because there was no attraction, but here we were, right? And I thought, okay, it's time for that wake up call. But I did it from a very loving space of, you worked so hard for 36 years to finally get to this point of leaving the potential sex addiction behind when you were married to your wife and coming into your own. Are you really going to just blow it all up now and potentially lose your kids, lose your job, all these sort of things? But it was because I had been working with a really great therapist through the coming out journey. And she was the one who, in her own way, called me out on it, because I came into a session. She goes, you look like you've been having some fun. And I was like, what do you mean? She goes, no, you just look like you've been having some fun. I'm like, I have. And she said, a lot of fun? I said, yeah. And she goes, more fun than you need to be having? And that was when I was like, okay, she's digging. You know, there's something there. Because I had said something like, yeah, I'm really struggling because, you know, just lots of, you know, late nights and everything. And she knew kind of my history. And she's like, you know, we went there. But also that strong sense of self started to step in. I'm like, this is not who I want to be. I want to be who I am in a really healthy way. But how do, you know, you live in, you know, LA, West Hollywood, all that good stuff. How do you help somebody who may not really see they're right there on the verge? Like, you know, going to the bar scene, ending up at the Abbey, or, you know, wherever all the popular clubs are these days. It's just a part of what they do. but then suddenly they realize something's wrong. How do you really help them open that doorway to go, hey, this is the, and I know you said earlier, like they come in for this and then suddenly here's what we reveal. What's one way you found that really helps them start to see something that maybe they're not capable of seeing?
Yeah. And to your point before too, and this is, I think, a big issue in my industry, is that therapists and psychologists or whatever licensure you have, you have a basic competence about mental health conditions and laws and ethics and whatever, but we all have areas of specialty and expertise. If you meet with a therapist who says they specialize in everything, like run for your life. There's no way, unless they're 400 years old and they've been able to, you know, we all have experience working certain places and working with certain groups, and you do develop, you know, certain areas of expertise. Like that's why for me, I really work heavily with the LGBT community, gay men, addiction and trauma, because that's where my work has led me. You know, if someone called me and they were a woman who was, you know, experiencing postpartum psychosis, like that would not be my area of expertise at all. Doesn't mean you can't work with that person and start with them, but you need to, you have a, anyway, but it's a real problem. I can't tell you how many times I've worked with someone and the person they were with before knew nothing about gay culture or addiction. They, they're like, what are poppers? What's G? What's pride? Like they don't know anything. And I, you know, I take an issue with that because I feel like we do have an ethical obligation to share with people. These are my limitations and this is my scope of understanding. So anyway, just, I just put that out there because I think it's so important. But so in terms of addiction, I very much share my bias because I think it's important to take a stance on what you consider to be, you know, a problem and not a problem, because it is a gray area. And if you leave it too much up for interpretation, I think you're going to go nowhere. So my perspective, and by the way, as a person who is sober almost 8 years and is in recovery and does go to meetings, which I don't share with most people, but I don't hide it either. I do have a bias that I have to be aware of and check sometimes. But from my perspective, no drug or alcohol use is good. It's all of it is bad. You know, you can get away with it to a certain degree. You can have a glass of wine a few times a week. That's okay. But I would never tell someone that's healthy, go for it, do it. Just the same thing I wouldn't tell someone to, you know, like skydive without a parachute. Like that's right. I guess you could do it, but it's not good for you. So
yeah, I think most people, if they really thought about it, and it was a few months ago, I've been in the hospitality industry a huge part of my life. So, you know, being in the bar scenes and everything was always part of my world. Right. And I've always been very cognizant of it, even though there was those moments when I got close to that space. And then it was a few months ago, somebody said, if people just realized many things we put into our body are poison.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why we're depressed and we don't feel good.
Right.
And it can be the simplest thing as alcohol or drugs. It can be the wrong foods. It can be too much chocolate. It can be too much, you know. And when you really think about it, would you really want to just take some poison and pour it into your body and then go, well, I wonder why I'm not feeling good.
Right. Right. It's so simple. Yes.
Right. But it is very simple.
It tough.
And we also make it something that, you know, let's just be honest. I mean, most of us, the reason that we will drink or use drugs or overeat or anything is we're trying to kill pain.
Yeah.
But we're not actually accomplishing that. We're actually not. We're actually adding to it. In fact, it was interesting. My husband and I went on a trip to Europe a few months ago, and we have been on the big, we've been on the big Atlantis cruises and all this sort of stuff, done all of that. And we went on a riverboat trip with some, okay, God bless us, heterosexuals. Okay. We were the only gay couple on the boat. Okay. And it was so interesting. And I guess they were good people. Many of them were very Christian. And I was observing like how interesting that, you know, and there's nothing, not saying that you can't drink as a Christian, but I was like, I was really like, wow, for being so Christian and everything, a lot of you were toasted at the end of every night. We were the ones, the token gays were the ones like, we're off to bed at 9:30, going to bed, you know? And it was just interesting. But I also saw in myself how much I have shifted. Like we've been on, so we did that trip. And then a year ago, we did an all gay cruise. Even on the all gay cruise, I was like, I can't figure out what I want to drink, which is such a shift for me. Like I love wine, but when you're in Polynesia and it's 90 degrees outside, wine just doesn't sound good. You know, it just isn't going to cut it. But I found it really interesting to see myself and my shift of my perspective and going, do I even want this? Do I, mm-hmm. I never even say, do I need this? I know I don't need it. Just don't need it. You know? In fact, we have made it kind of a standard between my husband and I. We never say, do you need a drink? Because we know we don't need it. Would you like a drink is how, you know, and we basically don't drink during the week. We used to drink quite a bit on the weekends. Now it's like, we have a huge wine closet. I'm like, I think it's time to stop the wine clubs because we don't drink as much as we used to, you know? But I think it's such an interesting thing to watch us as humans when we evolve into these spaces of, it isn't a need, it's a desire. Is that desire actually feeding you for your better good? And I'm mm-hmm. so glad you brought that up, because as a community, and especially as gay men, since both of you and I both specialize in working with gay men, for wanting the rocking bodies and all the stuff that we want, it's so interesting to me to see how many people, and again, I'm not passing judgment here, but just to observe how many people have the rocking bodies and everything, and they will put everything else into their system.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That should counteract that whole
yes.
thing.
Absolutely. And, you know, in psychology, we talk a lot about this concept of integration of mm-hmm. different parts of you coming together and being aware of one another. And it's all kind of in sync. And a marker of, you know, unhealthy psychology is what we call splitting, where things are just completely disconnected. And that's what you're referring to, is that you see this phenomenon of like the ideal gay man as someone who is really healthy, really fitness focused, you know, that sort of a thing. And then on the other hand, abuses his body very frequently. And those two things are in complete opposition. Mm-hmm. And yet that's kind of what we're told is the normal thing to do, which I don't, again, I don't pass judgment on it, but I think it's just fascinating that it's such a, because if you look at, you know, athletes, all they do is healthy stuff. They're training, they're working out, eating healthy. They don't then go out and do G and meth and ketamine. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen. They go to bed at 7 p.m. And, you know, so yeah.
Not all of them. Yeah. I mean, there's headline news ones that are screwing that up all the time too. But
you know what I mean? Like people
who are
like serious about fitness and health, they don't counteract it with this other stuff.
But something you just hit on, Michael, which I think, and again, I'm not trying to generalize here, listeners, but I think for us as gay men, I mean, I know lesbians and all the rest of our community have this, but I think especially for gay men, there's this stereotype of what a gay man's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, that's almost like, here's the mold. I mean, I work with guys who are over 40 coming out of the closet, and it's almost cookie cutter. I'm like, they're going to be the kid in the candy store. They're going to go out and they're going to party. Mm-hmm. Most of them aren't going to end up using drugs. Some of them will. Sex is definitely like risk. Lots of, you know, random sex and everything. And yet, they really want to be the healthiest they can be and all this sort of stuff. And then like when I walked into my therapist that day and she's like, you know, calling me on the rug, so to speak, it was like, yeah, what am I doing? This makes no sense. I've worked so hard to get to this space of being authentically who I am. And yet I swallowed the little blue pill of, okay, here's what I have to be, a gay man. I hung out in, you know, Laguna Beach back when Laguna Beach was the gay Mecca that it was. And I was at Woody's and the Boom Boom Room and all this sort of stuff. Never did drugs, but I definitely did my fair share of drink, party, you know. And yet I was like, what am I doing? This is counterproductive to what I wanted to be. And again, I'm not, mm-hmm. we're not passing judgment here. And I think because it is Pride season, we're inviting people to go enjoy, be in that. But when we talk about navigating the party scene and everything, you know, you've gone too far when you can't even comprehend you've gone too far.
Mm-hmm.
There's no resonance in there. And I would invite everybody as they go into Pride and enjoy it. If you're really like, oh man, I wish I could just, in fact, one client a couple of years ago said, I wish I could just go to Pride and remember what it was all about.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Don't you want to remember the fun?
Mm-hmm. The fun and the enjoyment and the dancing and the flirting and, you know, looking at, you know, good looking guys and, you know, I don't care, whatever your thing is, just going and being and enjoying being in the energy. And unfortunately, many people, you know, they let off their steam and they're like, I don't even remember what happened. Yeah. I don't even remember where I was. I don't even remember what I did.
Mm-hmm. So. I agree. And, you know, in terms of the, you know, obviously we're all a part of cultures and that we do have cultural expectations, no matter what you are, if you're gay, straight, whatever race you are. And so it's obviously hard not to compare yourself to those, that there are these ideals that are set for me and how meeting up to those expectations am I? But another big marker of psychological health is how strong do you have a sense of self? How much do you know yourself? And so when you go into a scenario, you're aware of the different pressures, but that you're not malleable completely, that you still know who you are, what your values are. Mm-hmm. And someone who doesn't have a strong sense of self is going to be much more susceptible to the pressures of do this, do that, and just really molding themselves. And I think that's where people get into the most danger. If you come out and you go into the community and you want to do all these things because it's authentic to you, then go for it. But people who get pulled into doing all these things that aren't really authentic, well, they're going to find if they're going to wake up in 10, 15 years and feel like a shell of a person because they're not going to know who they are anymore. And that's gonna be like a real crisis point in someone's life.
Well, it is a huge crisis point. Right after I started coaching, I had a client in West Hollywood and he was referred to me by a friend. He's like, oh, you know, Rick's just starting a coaching practice. I think he'd be really good for you. And of course, you know, coaching is very similar. They come in like thinking they're going to work on this. And then suddenly the real thing shows up. Right. And he was working on career stuff and really wanting to move through. And so as we started working, we're about the third or fourth session in. And I said, you know what? I feel like something else is what's really getting in the way with the work. Like you got a good job. You're climbing the ladder pretty consistently. You say this is what you want, but every time I give you something to work towards, like going for that next thing or considering making a transition and going to a different company and stuff, something gets in the way. He got really quiet. He goes, well, you know what? I really like going to the bathhouse. Of course, I was like, okay, wait, we just went like, woo, we just went a whole different direction, right? I'm like, okay, so are you telling me that, you know, you're going to the bathhouse and that's preventing you from getting a promotion? Where are we going here? Well, long story short, he like was really looking for love and he was spending so much time looking for love and trying to find it at the bathhouse, right? Which, not saying you can't, not going to knock that either. And so then we got into this deeper discussion and I said, well, okay, so let's focus on this now for a bit. Like, you really want love, you want a relationship. If that was present, how would that affect your career? And, you know, he started like really aligning values to like, if I had that, then I'd be really wanting to go for my career. But now if I go for it, all I'm doing is for me. I'm like, well, what's wrong with doing it for you? Blah, blah, blah. Right. Well, long story short, he felt really guilty about going to the bathhouse. Yeah. I started seeing that was like, that was what was underneath all of this. I feel guilty. Yeah. So then when I feel guilty, I go do it more, because when I go do that more, then I'm not doing the other stuff, like trying to build my career. Right. So I said, okay, now we got to the crux. I said, so let's try something this coming week. I don't care how many times you go to the bathhouse, but you tell me a number that you think would be really good for you to attempt to only go. Let's start cutting back, right? What number of times would you want to go? Well, I'm kind of a cold turkey guy. I'm like, I tried not to raise my eyebrows, you know, and I'm like, okay, cool. So you want to do cold turkey? He goes, yeah, I think I can go this week without going. I'm like, great. You know, I'm going to support you. You know, I'm not going to question that. I'm going to try to, this is you. This is what, does that feel aligned with you? Does that feel good to you? Yeah, that sounds really good. Comes back. And of course, failed miserably, right? He went more than he ever did. Right. I said, okay, well, what if you just accepted that it's okay to go to the bathhouse? Like, it's okay. This is where you are laying, no pun intended, you're sowing your oats, you're laying your seed to try to find a guy, right? What if you just made it acceptable and okay and good? I can. I'm like, you can make this whatever you want it to be for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we had 2 weeks off and he came back and there was a totally different person when he showed up. I'm like, so you look pretty happy. Like, did you like get laid a whole lot between now and the last time I saw you? And he goes, it's so interesting. As soon as I said it was okay to go, I didn't have near the desire. I said, really? Mm-hmm. So what did you get done without that desire? He goes, well, I got 20 resumes sent out. He goes, I've got 2 interviews lined up. I was like, wow. The interesting thing was he kept giving himself more and more permission to say it's okay to be there. and his frequency came way down, but then he started putting himself out other places. And so it was just this interesting thing, Michael, of him replacing what he thought was the shame and the guilt with something mm-hmm. that gave him pleasure. And within 6 months, I mean, we were kind of done working, but 6 months later, he sent me a message and he goes, I just need you to know that permission to be okay to go to the bathhouse. I actually did meet somebody.
Yeah.
And I did meet him at the bathhouse, and we've been together, and a year later they were married. So it was an interesting thing to like, it took the shift. And I think this is the thing with any kind of addiction or learning how to navigate the partying and knowing when it's too much, is you just got to wrap your head around what is it for you? Not everybody else. What is it for you? Because you're going to get everybody else weighing in on this. Oh, I've been sober. You do this, do that. Nothing wrong with that either. I know you being sober, you probably had enough people say, here's what you got to do, and here's how you make it happen. But I think oftentimes for anyone, and especially as gay men, we are looking for so much validation and approval and acceptance that exacerbates these quote addictions or not knowing when it's gone too far and thing, because ooh, in the moment on the dance floor, we're doing G or whatever, you know, everything's good. And then when it's done, you feel like crap.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, cause it's like a validation from other people. It's like a cup with a hole at the bottom. It's yep. going to feel good for about a minute, and then it's just going to wash out and you're going to want more. And we know this, that it's like, it's such a cliche, but the only way to feel validated is to validate yourself. If mm-hmm. you are dependent on other people, good luck. You're always going to feel wanting for more. You're always going to be hungry. You're always going to get it, and it's going to slip right through your fingers. You're going to be chasing your tail forever. And yep. even mega successful people do this of, I need validation from this or that or this, whatever. And it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. If you mm-hmm. but if you can give it to yourself, you're free. You're free mm-hmm. from this endless maze that you've been caught in. And you know, to your point about sex, like one thing that drives me crazy is that, you know, gay men are shamed a lot for sex, obviously, but especially yep. in terms of quantity, if a gay man is hooking up and doing this, it's like, you know, he's slutty, he's whatever, he's an addict. Find me one straight man who is shamed for hooking up with too many hot girls. I've never heard that in my life. I've never heard a straight guy go, oh my God, so many beautiful women are hooking up with me and I just feel terrible about myself. That yep. I've never heard that phrase once. They get high Yet, fives and...
But if you twist that onto women, then they're sluts.
Yes, yes, exactly. You
know? And this yeah. is where I think there's an intersectionality between gay men and women. We
for
get
sure.
We both sure. get shamed for mm-hmm. wanting to be sexual beings and enjoying sex.
Yep. Absolutely.
Such an interesting thing, you know?
Yep. Yeah, but I've literally never worked with a straight man once who's ever said anything even remotely close to, I feel bad mm-hmm. about having sex.
Never.
Never.
Never. Mm-mm. And it's such an interesting double standard. But I'm going to go back to something else that you said, because it really resonated with me. And I think this is something important for anyone who's like, okay, I may be feeling like, you know, I want some guidance. I want to, maybe I am that person that's kind of sitting there in the middle, like, I'm open-minded, but I'm curious if I'm reaching that point. It's really super important, A, to own that you can see that self-realization is huge, that self-acceptance and self-awareness. But the thing that, Michael, that you brought up that I think is so important is finding the person who has that niche of experience.
Yeah.
Because you will feel so much more aligned. The reason that I know I've been so successful as a coach is because I said, I'm only going to work with men over 40 coming out of the closet mm-hmm. because I was 36 when it happened for me. And my journey really began there. And there's a likeness of journey that I can bring them to that space. Now that doesn't mean I'm the only guy, but it's interesting how many people, oh, you can work with kids.
No.
I could, I don't
no,
want
no,
to.
No kids for me either.
Because that wasn't my experience. I mean, my high school and college life was pure hell. Yes, I did come out at 19 and I went back in the closet. Now, can I? I've worked with a few teens, but it had nothing to do with sexuality. It was more just like keeping them motivated. And, you know, because I had a helicopter parent who said, oh, you know, I live in a college town. So every once in a while, a helicopter parent will find me when I used to have like Yelp ads and all this stuff. Oh, could you work with my son? I guess not really what I wanted to do, but every once in a while when I was like, I need money, sure, I'll work, you know, I think it's so important to find that person that A, you resonate with, number one, mm-hmm. and two, who does have that experience. You know, I would never work with somebody who's deep into addiction. It's just not my experience. I've had experience with family members, but if somebody came to me like that, I'm like, you either need to be working with a therapist who's in that space or a psychologist or a coach who's had some of that experience, because that's not my specialty. That is just plain and simple, not my specialty. And I think that's a really important space to play as well. So as we're in Pride season and people are venturing out to enjoy and be, you know, in Pride and the energy and everything, what would be one of the things you would invite people to observe in themselves if they are wondering, am I going too far? What could be a sign for them?
Well, so I would suggest to anyone who's even wondering that is, why don't you take this year as just a experiment to do it sober? Again, you're going to go to Pride a million times. Well, not a million, but I don't know how, 50 times, right, whatever it is. Just take 1 year to go to the festivities without do nothing. And just like you said, just observe it. See how you experience it. You're probably going to remember more. You're going to spend less money. You're less messy. Maybe you'll even like it more. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you won't. Maybe you'll hate it. Who cares? But just go in.
Well, the thing is you could get halfway through. So let's just, you know, I don't know. WeHo Pride is what? Two whole days or something like that?
Yeah.
You could go first day if you're going to do the weekend pass thing. You go the first day and try. And maybe you're going to get halfway through that first day and you're like, this isn't for me. But then, and I do this thing where it's like, I do levels of energy work with people. And I always say, okay, well, at level one, what would it be? And level two, level three, level four, you know, you kind of like map it out. Okay, at level one, I'm going to be playing it fully sober. Maybe at level two, I'm going to be sober, but, you know, maybe I'm only going to have a drink every 3 hours while I'm at the festival. Set a plan in place and it not like beat yourself up sort of thing.
No, definitely not.
Go with it. Well, first be very clear on your intention around why you're doing this. Mm-hmm. Don't just go, okay, I need to do this because this is what Rick and Michael said to do on the podcast. No, we didn't tell you to do anything. We're saying observe and let yourself be in it in a different way. It was so interesting when we were on that riverboat cruise a couple of months ago to observe myself going, yes, I enjoyed wine, didn't drink a lot of it, but I had wine with dinner. But when it came to the cocktails, I can count on both hands over a week long, I had 10 actual cocktails. And I actually think it was less than 10 because I just was like, doesn't even sound good. But I loved it because guess what? The whole rest of the experience, I was very aware of. I was really enjoying it. There were just things that I took in a whole different way. And, you know, when you're going to go spend, you know, a huge amount of money to go on a 2-week trip to Spain and Portugal, you kind of want to remember what you did, right?
Yes.
And
yes.
I think that's the thing is go in with intentionality, not with beating yourself up. That's not what this is about. But asking yourself, why is it I want to experience Pride in a different way this year? What's the benefit that I could gain? What is the thing I'd like to walk away with? Set those intentions really clearly and then give yourself room for grace. And if it's okay, half the day I'm going to stay sober and, you know, maybe you're just going to simply go, my goal is I'm going to have a drink every 3 hours. Cool. Maybe it's every 4 hours. I don't know, whatever works for you, but this is how you start to understand, am I going too far? You get the awareness and you get the understanding of who you are.
I agree. And when I suggest to people to try something out sober, if they fail, that's not a bad thing. It's information. Mm-hmm. Because you can really hone in on the moment of where did you decide to change your mind? Like what happened there? That's usually good information to become aware of. And I don't know how you feel too, but maybe because I'm a little bit rebellious, but to your point about the, you know, if when you think about it, take a step back of these events are put on, they want you to drink, they want you to spend money, they want you to lose your inhibitions, they want you to do this. And if I think about like I'm being caught up in a system that's kind of, you know, trying to financially exploit me, that appeals to me, to my like rebellious spirit of, oh, I don't like that idea. You know, I don't want to be pushed around just so I spend, you know, throw my credit card around casually. That doesn't feel good to me personally.
Right. Because, and this is where the snowball begins. You know, I'm so glad you brought this up because, okay, well, I'm going to have a drink this because everybody's having drinks. Oh, look at the lines. We better get in line now. So we get, you know, it's almost that impending pressure sort of thing, mm-hmm. right? And I have been in numerous Pride celebrations where it's always interesting, again, in observation mode, to walk past the pride booths that are the sober booths.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of just like kind of looks at them like, and you can see some people like rolling their eyes like, oh, what's wrong with them? Right. It's just such an interesting space. But yet when you give yourself the permission to look at it through the other lens and ask yourself, what is it I really want to experience? And I love this, not getting caught up in the system. And when you were saying that, it's like, yeah, how many people go off to the concerts, you know, whether it's Taylor or Madonna or Beyonce or whoever is, you know, touring right now, that's, you know, and suddenly you got to get the shirt and you get to stand in line and pay the, you know, ridiculous price for drinks and everything. I remember a couple of years ago as pre-COVID, the first time my husband and I saw Hamilton, we went to San Francisco to see it and we walked in and we're like, oh, well, let's get a drink, you know, because this is what we do, right? We get a drink. And it was kind of interesting that there were no prices up. They listed all the cocktails and stuff. The guy was like, would you like a double, you know, since you're here early? I'm like, sure. I was never more pissed off in buying drinks because those doubles ended up being $80 for two drinks.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is, let's not do it because it's there. Let's just, you know, just because we're here, we don't have to do this.
I love that you just said that. Let's not do this just because it's there. That's perfect.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. And we're, you know, again, we're really blessed in our world that we're at a space in our life where that discernment shows up more and more in our life,
mm-hmm.
you know, and in everything from drinking and eating and, you know, whatever, that we go, okay, what's behind this? Not saying that everything's under the microscope, but what's behind this? And do we need to do this? Do we not need to do this? Do we want to do this? There were times on that European trip we just did that, you know, it was tempting because the wine was so cheap in Portugal and Spain. We usually had a bottle of wine with dinner, but there were nights that were like, do you want a bottle or you just want a glass? No, let's just do a glass, you know? And there was no like, oh my gosh, but we're here. We need to experience this. No, we're here and we're experiencing this right now in this way. And I didn't regret like, oh my gosh, I didn't wake up the next morning going, oh, we should have had a whole bottle of wine versus a glass of wine, you know? And sometimes I think it's that habitual, how we've been socialized. This is what you do. Yeah. This is what we're meant to do. Yep. And then suddenly we go, oh, then we wonder why there's so much addiction to food, to sex, to drugs, to alcohol, to shopping, to all this sort of stuff. So
exactly. And, you know, just because something is normal doesn't mean it's healthy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's true. And in our community, and I do take issue with this, we have normalized drug use a lot compared to some other communities. I mean, some have also done the same thing, but we have made it extremely normal to do, you know, right now it's like G and poppers and ketamine. Those are very, you know, very common, very popular. That's like a perfectly normal, healthy part of a gay man's life. And I personally don't like that. I don't mind if you want to every once in a while go for it and lose your inhibitions and have a good time, no problem. But when it becomes a weekly thing, it's a problem. But also to suggest that that's healthy is also a problem. We gotta call it like for what it is. Like this isn't good, right?
And it goes back to like you're working so hard to be this healthy specimen of a man. And yet the thing you're putting into you is the thing that can tear that down the most.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like I smoked for years. I smoked many years ago. It's been so long ago. I don't remember when I quit, but it's been that long that I don't remember. But I can now see that some of the health issues that I have are probably because I smoked for 20 some years.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting to see so many in our own community as we age. Some of us don't age that well, but then when you have the conversations with them, they're like, oh yeah, I was the party boy. I did this. You know, and not everybody's going to be that. I mean, you know, there's a lot of good looking guys that they were the party guys. In fact, I interviewed another guest that I already referred to, and he was a party guy. He was a DJ that was flown all over the world for all the gay clubs and everything. And he looks damn good, but he realized, you know, all his drug use over the years didn't do him well. And then he found the pathway to being sober and, you know, becoming a therapist and then a psychologist. And he's a Buddhist practitioner and all these different things. And again, guys, we're not beating anybody up here.
No.
We're just saying, if you're feeling, if there's a rumbly in your tummy, kind of to quote poo, that something's not quite right, this is probably a really good sign to go, okay, well, what if I just tried something slightly different?
Yeah.
And that would be our wish for you for Pride. If you're feeling that, give yourself permission. Just give yourself permission. You give yourself permission. Don't wait for somebody else to say, oh yeah, I'm going to go to Pride sober too. Now, maybe you can find somebody else that's going to, that's going to help you. That's going to be like, cool, I got my wingman, right? But own your permission to give yourself permission to do the things that's important to you so that you can be better at being you and doing what you want. So,
yes.
Well, Michael, I have so appreciated this conversation. I think it's perfect timing for Pride and everything. If somebody wants to connect with you, what's the best way? I know you have a website. You've got,
I mean, I have such an unusual last name that if you Google Michael Pezzullo, P-E-Z-Z-U-L-L-O, you'll see me.
Yeah.
And my website is just my name, michaelpezzullo.com. So you can contact me there or
awesome.
All the things that will come up. Yeah.
Yep. And he's based in LA. So if you're an LA listener and you feel like Michael could be a real good connection for you, I encourage you to connect with him and reach out. All the information will be on the show page as well, guys, as it always is. But again, guys, happy Pride. Go be you, go enjoy. But if you're feeling that need, like something slightly off, I'm going to invite you to listen to that little nudge within yourself and go be who you're meant to be. And thanks again, Michael, for being a really great guest and sharing with us during this Pride season.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here. Thanks.
That's a wrap for 40 Plus. Gay men, gay talk, where size doesn't matter. We drop our bullshit, get over our screwed up fears, make bold moves, and live life without apologies. Don't forget to join us on Facebook at 40 Plus, Gay Men, Gay Talk, where the conversations continue.